Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to the Danger Room, the X-Men Comics Commentary Podcast. My name's Adam.
And my name is Jeremy.
We are here today to discuss Uncanny X-Men number 286, the March 1992 issue on sale January 7th, 1992, with a cover price of $1.25 and a circulation of 6,000. No. 460,000. 875.
That seems like an impressive number.
I mean, not for 1960s, but for 1990s, sure.
How many books were they circulating in the 60s?
That was like millions.
Really?
Yeah.
I mean, I thought X-Men 1, I thought that was the one that sort of broke the million circulation barrier.
That's the best-selling comic of all time, right?
I think so. It's probably like 2.5 million issues.
So I think circulation just used to be much higher because more people were buying.
8.2 million is what X-Men number one did.
So if X-Men number one did 8.2 million, then okay. I feel like circulation used to be in the 50s and the 60s, there were like a million.
Yeah.
It's pretty common.
Maybe. Wasn't around, wasn't alive.
Spitting out those facts correctly could be – somebody will correct us, right? Yeah. Do you guys like to do?
Yeah. Well, I'm just curious because to me it sort of seems like in the 60s, I think comics were fairly prevalent, but like people just bought comics, right? Oh, Donald Duck's on the shelf. I'll buy Donald Duck. Hey, what's this weird superhero comic? I'll buy that. I mean, like, right. The distribution would have definitely been higher in the 60s than 2024. But I feel like in the 90s it would have been higher because I think comics were far more mainstream than sort of the nerdy niche thing that it probably was in the 60s. But I'm also speculating.
In the 60s, I think you had like kids and you had adults and everybody just kind of reading comics. Whereas by the time you get to the 80s, it's mostly adults, probably a few less kids. And you get to today and it's almost all adults.
Yeah. Adults of our age, if not a little older.
Yeah.
Yeah, sir.
Anyway, this one's titled The Close Call.
And on the cover, there's definitely a close call between Colossus, Jean, and Archangel.
Yeah, it's almost like Archangel is attacking Colossus and Jean Grey, but we know that couldn't happen because he's a good guy.
Yeah.
This is a Jean cover. Which is why it looks so nice.
It's a nice looking cover. I don't think I'd wear it on my t-shirt. But from a proportion standpoint, like Angel's never looked better. Like he's flying sort of at us. So his hands are the right proportion to his feet. Nothing looks silly. Good
if
cover.
If you were like an Angel fan, you might pick this up as a t-shirt.
Maybe if it was just Angel and it had the entire wingspan, that could be a cool shirt.
Like you'd have to explain why, well, in your version you wouldn't, but in this cover's version, you'd have to explain why he's knocking over Jean Grey.
No. I'm saying like the t-shirt would not have Jean or Colossus. It would just have the, yeah. That could be a cool t-shirt. But these days it seems like they can put whatever they want on a t-shirt and people will just buy it. So this
could, yeah, if it's got Jim Lee artwork, people are going to buy it.
Yeah. No explanation needed. Other than that, I mean, he could have done something with the background, but I don't know. The poses and the characters are so dynamic that I guess the gradient green to yellow background's not a huge detractor.
Jim Lee doesn't have time for backgrounds.
No. I would have picked a different color than green, though.
He's got to be arting the X-Men and preparing to move to Image and doing stories for X-Men and Uncanny X-Men.
Which, as a matter of fact, he and Wills Portacio are doing story and art. I don't know. Do you think Jim Lee's doing a little art in here? He might be.
No.
Oh, okay. So you think he just is like, here's the story.
I did not detect any Jim Lee art in this issue, but that's not to say there isn't any. Just that I noticed when the Wills Portacio art seems to go a little off.
Yeah.
That's, which makes me wonder if Art T-Bear is taking over at that point.
Right. Art T-Bear is doing the finishing. Scott Lobdell's doing the scripting. Joe Rosa's doing the coloring. Task Force X, whomever that is doing the lettering. Bob Harris is editing, and Tom DeFalco is the editor-in-chief.
So my favorite thing to do is occasionally, my favorite thing to do, read from Marvel Comics, The Untold Story. And I may have already read this one, but I'm going to read it again just in case.
Okay.
Within a few months, Byrne, like Claremont, was faced with impossible turnaround times, forced to dialogue from last-minute faxes of Lee and Portasio's work. The pages were arriving piecemeal three at a time, and every time another fax came through, the plot would take an unexpected turn so that Byrne would have to rewrite the previous pages. He found this breaking point when Harris called and asked him to script an entire issue overnight. Byrne refused. "Something's got to be done about this," he told Harris. "This is insane." "We'll take care of it," Harris assured him, then hung up the phone and hurried over to Nisi Ace's office. "John's not scripting this issue," Harris said. "Can you do it for me?" "When do you need it by?" "Tomorrow." "There's no way." At that moment, Scott Lobdell, a struggling stand-up comic who was always hustling for freelance writing gigs, walked by Nisi Ace's office door. Nisi Ace, smiling, pointed his finger, and Harris looked up. Harris hung his head and let out a resigned sigh. Lobdell finished the issue overnight. 2 weeks later, Byrne heard from a friend who'd seen Lobdell at a party. Lobdell had been given the regular X-Men writing assignment. Years later, Byrne said, "I was told you should always be careful when Bob says, 'We'll take care of it.'"
Is that this issue?
It doesn't say what issue it is. I would have to imagine it's either this issue or whatever his first issue of X-Men was.
Is this Scott Lobdell's first Uncanny?
I believe so, yes.
Okay, and was John Byrne scripting the last issue?
I believe so, yes.
Interesting. I don't pay attention to those details. I didn't actually think this one was that poorly written. I'm not terribly invested in the story and what's going on, but there was nothing in here where I was like, this is stupid.
Oh, I thought the whole thing was pretty stupid.
Oh my gosh, okay.
And I'm probably being a bit nitpicky, as you will see, but yeah, I thought this was Dullsville.
It was definitely Dullsville, and like I said, I don't really care about what's happening. Anytime they go to, remember when X-Factor went to the Eternal Planet? I hated that entire six-run issue. It just felt like we got to do something until we get to the actual story, so let's put them somewhere else for a little while. That's what this feels like.
Feel like a story so much as like we want this to happen, and I guess this should happen too, so that something happens. It's like basically the whole story is let's figure out a way to bring back Colossus's brother for some reason.
Which is a weird thing, and I guess as we get through there, I honestly was like, is this a retcon? But it's not, right? He's always had a brother. I had forgotten. There is one reference to when he must have talked about it that I don't remember, but yeah.
I mean, it's sort of a retcon.
Well, I mean, like, what happens to him, but I didn't even know that there had been a previous reference to a Rasputin brother.
I'm sure we covered it.
I'm sure we did, too.
Way back when.
Yep, in at least one issue of X-Men, so... And that was probably just a throwaway line that Chris Claremont threw in the book. But, I mean, I guess every throwaway line turns into something at some point.
Every throwaway line is a possibility for something.
It's a true statement.
Whether or not people take advantage of that, who knows?
Yep. So, when we open this on a full-page spread, I think Jean has just pulled Peter away from his harem of women. Wasn't that a thing that happened in the last issue? Or is that a couple pages?
Right. Got his chest exposed.
Yeah. And
shown up with her mysterious stranger friend, who it was revealed had a similar face to Peter.
Yeah. Lennon's ghost.
Somehow they're twins. But they're not twins. They just have similar facial structure.
Yeah. Well, they could have been. Well, they're not like biological twins, but they're very similar looking. In fact, when I posted the X-Men 286 screenshots, I did a side-by-side of Peter and Mikhail here. And it's obvious that they're going for a Mikhail is a weathered version of Peter. And it was clever in the last issue, I thought. Okay. But Lennon's ghost says Colossus, and Mikhail says wrong on both counts, Peter. Both counts.
Neither Lennon
nor
a ghost.
Yeah, okay. I have
the implication there.
I had to think about that, but sure.
The X-Men have seen it all. They have witnessed the fall of civilizations and the rebirth of a universe, but nothing in Colossus's experience could have prepared the mutant for the sight before him. countless dimensions from the world he calls home.
I think we could argue that, right? I'm sure Colossus has seen some crazy stuff, least of which is his brother in a different dimension.
I mean, I guess if you, I don't know.
Hey,
if your brother's dead and then 30 years later, or how old is Colossus? He's probably in his 20s in this issue. You know,
sure.
10, 15 years has gone by and like you're in a dimensional, you're in another dimension and your brother's there. You're like, this can't be real.
Or you're like, well, I've seen Sidri and Shi'ar and Brood and we died once and we came back to life. This tracks. Hey, brother, how's it going? Are you real? Are you magic? I don't even know.
No. They say the day you start accepting all the wackiness is the day you die.
Ah, that's fair. Now, is this, if this is Scott Lobdell's sort of first breakout issue, I'm making a name for myself. I'm sure he wants to impress Bob Harris and Tom DeFalco. Ultimately, be like, I'm going to hit him with a bang.
I guess. I mean, you know, he does a lot of issues. We've seen him before in the pages of Marvel Comics Presents.
Yeah.
He does a lot of those.
Yeah.
And they're hit or miss. So I guess if you're like, this is the big guns now, you got to bring out your best material that you've been saving. All your good, juicy stand-up comic material.
I wonder if there's any of that. I mean, I don't know anything about Scott Lobdell other than he ultimately scripts a lot of things.
Yeah, no, he's one of the, I guess you could say one of the architects of the 90s.
Yeah. And I'm not, you know, no dig against him, but I'm wondering if there's any like video or anything of his stand-up material and if it was any good. Clearly, maybe it wasn't great or it wasn't like breakout stand-up material if he switched over to writing comics and there's nothing funny in here, so.
I'm going to say just the fact that you're starting to talk about it now means if it's not there, the algorithm has kicked in that it will show up within the next like year or so.
That'd be hilarious if all of a sudden I'm watching Netflix and it's a Scott Lobdell stand-up feature from 1987. Well, anyways, Storm, she can't believe it. He's like, is this true? And he's like, we'll talk about it later. There's no time.
Yeah, and then they talk about it anyway.
Well,
it's been years since I stood in the presence of my little brother. In truth, I had long ago abandoned. Oh, now I'm doing a Irish.
So I can see what maybe John Byrne was having a struggle with, right? So Mikhail reveals his face. Colossus runs up to him and angrily lifts him up out of the air.
Well, it's not supposed to be angry. That's supposed to be a look of joy.
It's not, though. The third panel, they're like very happy to see each other. If you look at, I mean, Mikhail is like, looks like he's surprised and angry. Colossus absolutely looks angry. Now, the dialogue changes it around, right? But that's not what the drawing tells me.
Yeah. And I don't know if that's just because Wilps Portacio doesn't seem on his game in this issue.
Seems
like he's getting a little bit tired. There's a few exceptions.
Does he end up going over to Image too?
Yeah.
Yeah. So these guys are all talking contracts at this point. They're like, yeah, we've got about two more issues. Let's get through this. This is the last one?
I don't know. It could be. I don't think it is.
I don't
think
remember.
It's got at least two or three more.
I was going to say, we are darn close. But I mean, when you found a company, you don't just do it in a month. So they know what's going on.
Yeah.
Yeah, so they, you know, there's somebody there, a person in the background. Primate, is it possible?
Primate is still here.
Yeah.
Primate?
I guess this is Sri. I don't remember Sri, but Mikhail is the savior. And now they're like, oh my gosh, there are two saviors. But Primate wonders if maybe they're cursed instead.
With all due respect, savior, either version, we do not have the luxury of time for this. I am afraid our reunion is ill-timed. The portal grows stronger by the moment. It is only a matter of... I sound like Transylvania. It's only a matter of being before... It's only a matter of time before Earth is pulled into this realm, destroying both worlds. It is a foregone conclusion, Savior. Surely you intend to use your sacred power to once again close the portal And then that's when we get the crux of the story. What's his name? Misha?
Mikhail?
Mikhail says no.
I think Misha's probably like a
shortening of the name.
Yeah, or maybe a familiar, like I would call, Peter would call him Misha because they're related, right? But nobody else would probably, maybe. I don't know, I'm just speculating. So yeah, the crux of the story here is that Mikhail could close the portal with his sacred power on page 3 and the issue could be over, but he will not. And no. We get the backstory, and then ultimately we will get the reason why he is choosing not to use his power. But as we learned, I guess, in X-Men number 99, Mikhail was a cosmonaut, and he was going to fly up into space, but then his ship blew up. However, that was just a cover-up because his powers manifested, and the communists, CCCP, they wanted to cover it all up. So they had to manufacture a way to kill him. And so they did. That was a cover story of his ship blowing up. But then they actually did fly somewhere and they got sucked into a portal. He got separated from his crew and then later found out that his crew was alive and that the lady that he was going to marry's father was double-crossing him.
So the guy that killed his crew and took him on for no other reason than he considered him, Mikhail, to be his plaything.
Yeah.
And apparently let him marry his daughter. Not sure why he did that. But I guess he was like giggles, you know, and it was like, this is hilarious. I'm going to let my daughter marry this guy.
Yeah.
Anyway, Mikhail discovers that the portal is somehow tied to the Avatar's great power. So he goes out and uses his abilities, which, let's see, they describe them as my energy-wielding talents. That's his mutant power. As energy-wielding talents. There's something about he disturbs energy or something like that.
They also talk about how, in addition to his ship crashing, as he's traversing the land, he finds sort of a graveyard of submarines, airplanes, turn of the century sailing vessels, etc. So it's kind of like, it's not the Bermuda Triangle, but things that have disappeared from the Earth and never to be found have ended up here. And then he talks about their cargoes being stripped. And does that ever come back? Or is that just like a...
No, I think it's just kind of being part of the whole, why was I the only one to be allowed to survive?
But he wasn't the only one that was, his crewmates had woke up earlier.
But they killed them.
But then they killed them, yeah. So probably the same thing may have happened with these as well.
So presumably the Avatar has been killing all of these people, but if not, we're never going to find out.
No. I was sort of, and you know, this is just me on page 5 at this point, sort of speculating like, oh, maybe that graveyard of pieces and parts they're going to cleverly use to put together a contraption to get back to Earth once they save the day. And as far as I recall, this little graveyard thing, which is a neat idea, it never comes back.
Nope.
So
it doesn't.
But it's a neat idea. I like it.
So he uses his cool guy powers to close the portal. And it turns out that either his powers or the power created from closing the portal, I think it's the power created from closing the portal, kills everybody, including his wife.
Yeah, the power released by closing of the portal knew nothing of politics or bloodline. The destruction force spared no one. So he used his powers to close the portal, and then I guess probably the energy that was released out of that event was the thing that led to killing everybody. So he didn't directly kill anybody, but he blames himself. If he had not used his powers to close the portal, his beloved would still be alive, as well as some other folks that he had met along the way.
The destructive force spared no one, the Avatar, my countrymen, the wife I never stopped loving. I feel like you don't say you never stopped loving someone unless you did. He could have just said my wife and people would have been, you know, there would have been an audible gasp.
Scott Lobdell is all in. All the emotions and the feels are going to attempt to be displayed here.
I mean, you know, you hope you'd never stop loving your wife.
Adam, on page 7 of this comic book, which you don't have, is an advertisement for classic Marvel t-shirts. And I don't know if you remember, but like there were full-color spreads that covered the entire t-shirt.
You'd have one of them X-Men number one.
One of them is X-Men number one. One of them is Ghost Rider. There's a Punisher. There's Spider-Man number one. There's a Silver Surfer. Did you ever own one of these or see one of these?
I can sort of picture the ad in my mind's eye, but no, I never purchased really anything from the ads of comic books.
The only reason I ask is, like, you know, t-shirts that they make today generally are not like full t-shirt spreads of any sort of artwork, and I just kind of wonder what these actually looked like and how long they held up for, because I never knew anybody that owned one of these, let alone, I mean, you'd think that you would have seen one of these in a comic book store. I don't recall seeing them there either.
Or many of the conventions that you go to sometimes.
I never went to a convention.
I've been to a few.
Never been to a comic book convention in my life.
Really?
I don't think so. Pretty sure I haven't.
Small one?
What?
Not even like a small one?
They have one in Madison from time to time. And every now and then I'm like, oh, I should go. Like last time they had, it was either... I think it was Stan Lee, but it was like 3 months before he died. And I was like, which is sad on the one hand that I could have gotten a chance to go there, but I think you had to pay all this money to like just stand next to him. Like, don't talk to Stan Lee. So on the one hand, I never got to meet a decrepit old man, which is fine. But on the other hand, I never got to meet Stan Lee. So. And do you really meet somebody if you pay somebody $100 and you stand next to him to get a picture? I don't know. You get a nice keepsake, that's for sure.
In my experience, if you meet somebody to get a signature, you can take advantage of that time and like actually talk to them. And if you can get them talking, then that's like meeting them.
Yeah, I suppose.
But only if you can get them talking, because then they won't usher you along.
Right, right.
They'll actually be interested in what you're saying. You'll have a little back and forth. And I would say that qualifies as meeting. But when you get your picture taken and they shunt you into the room and they snap a photo and he barely looks at you and they move you along, that doesn't really count as meeting.
Yeah. But no, I've been to conventions that have had comic books, but they weren't specifically like a comic book convention. Anyways, just that I saw that and I'd always wondered how good a quality those shirts actually were. And I don't think I'll ever know the answer to that.
You might not. I mean, you might scour the world's thrift shops.
I mean, yeah, you could probably find. I could probably find out pretty quickly on eBay, but I'm not going to do that. So the next page looks like it was drawn by somebody else. But it's so
the point of all that is Mikhail will not use his powers because he feels guilty about having killed a whole bunch of people.
Exactly.
Even though technically not really his fault, but, you know, try to tell that to a survivor.
This is maybe where Scott Lobdell's humorous side comes out, because we have Iceman and Sunfire paired up, and there's all these guys that are like, we're going to beat everybody up. And there's a little bit of joking going on back and forth between these guys. Not that it's funny, but they're trying.
Where I'm like, ooh.
The art's terrible and the dialogue's not great.
But Spartaccio really either phoned this page in or he just did the outlines and Art Tiber kind of takes over.
It sort of has, and this is not a dig on people that draw Archie comics, but it kind of has a Archie comic feel. It's very cartoony in both colors and lines.
Not that it's necessarily bad, I guess. It's just that it doesn't line up very well with the rest of the issue.
Exactly. And the ultimate or the outcome of this is that in classic Iceman form, Iceman encases these three bad guys in a chunk of ice. And surely their insides freeze and they die. Iceman has murdered again.
32 degrees later.
Because, I mean, if you're encased in 32 degrees, then half these guys are bare-chested. You're not going to live long. And if you do, you're going to have severe frostbite on your body.
Oh, yeah. No, I mean, these are aliens, though, so maybe they're impervious to the... Maybe they're just immobile and they don't suffer from cold.
That could be.
This one guy when he moves his swords around, it looks like he has four arms. It's just at first I was like, whoa, he's got four arms now.
Yeah.
And I guess there's very, I don't know. This is not a good example of how you draw movement, I suppose, is what I'm getting at.
Oh my gosh, is that movement? I actually thought it was like this dude's arms and then a couple of other dudes' arms that are just happen to get in the frame.
I suppose that's also possible.
But movement makes more sense. Do you remember those old like pink muscle figures?
Yes, I do.
This dude looks like one of those guys.
Yeah, he kind of does.
Kind of looks like the main one with the mohawk. And there's a little, I don't know if I'd call this misogyny, but, you know, there's this lady that's like, ooh, stranger, is there anything I can do? And Iceman's like, I have a list. And Sunfire's like, Iceman. He's like, fine, we'll have to leave. And the lady's like, oh, as you wish.
She does look very sad about it.
And it's like, all right. This is the direction you went.
I mean, you know, I guess she's in the moment. She just saved and... I don't know. Never having saved a woman's life, I don't know if this is how they react.
I mean, to go out on a limb and say that the vast majority are not going to react that way. They'll probably say thanks.
No, they'll probably be very thankful.
Can I buy you lunch or, you know, something like that? But, you know, it's not going to be immediately pleasure favors. But anyways, Forge and the professor are flying around trying to figure out how they can help.
And this is here just to recap the previous two issues, just to let you know that there's danger. The void, when last we saw it in X-Men 284, was opening and spilling out into the rest of the Earth, and it's still happening. It's gonna do stuff, and Shield's involved, and Hank Pym and Mr. Fantastic, but they can't figure it out.
Oh, that is Hank. Okay, I missed the fact that their names were right above their head, because I recognized Nick Fury and Mr. Fantastic, but I didn't know who was in the middle. I was like, Captain America, that doesn't make sense, but you're right, their names are right there. Yeah, they don't know how to fix it, and so Forge is like, well, you're just going to have to trust your students. This is what you trained them for, so let's give them some time. So there's some stakes, Adam. We've created some stakes.
Exactly. That's the whole purpose of this page, is just to let you know that, hey, the stakes are still happening. Higher than ever, perhaps. But, yeah, it's a lot of dialogue.
And this is where, I don't know.
We need more dialogue.
The issue gets a little stretchy here, right? Like, there's just some arguing between Mikhail and Colossus. Colossus, I think, is extolling the dream of the professor and how he needs to save people. I don't know.
And he's like, I won't save anybody because I don't want to kill anybody. And Colossus is like, well, if you don't, you're going to kill all the people on Earth. And he's like, that doesn't mean anything to me because I don't want to kill the people here. Make no mistake, the dead will walk beside me every day of my life. I will never absolve myself of the sins I committed. If you are incapable of understanding that, perhaps you should have stayed on the farm.
Colossus is like, I'm no longer the farm boy you left. I'm Colossus. He turns into Colossus, and Mikhail's like, oh my god, I didn't know you could do that. And then Colossus is like, I'm angry, and he punches like some rocks and says, look, I've saved people, and I've killed people too, and I'm not happy about that, but I keep going. Have you given up? And then he takes off.
He takes off. Meanwhile, like, Jean is interjecting. He's like, guys, I don't want to get in the middle of Colossus. This isn't helping.
Right.
I don't know why she's there. Well, I guess she's there because Will Sportacio drew her there, and Scott Labdello feels like she needs to do something.
Yeah, I mean, she's got like a little power signature over her hand, and so I don't know if she's holding Colossus back or... This was a page, they were going to do something different on page 14, and then they changed their mind, and this is what John Byrne was talking about.
Anyway, Peter storms off. Jean says, Mikhail, I've never seen him act that way before, which I don't know if that's true. And then Mikhail says, that's because I've never let him down before, which is like, you don't even know this guy.
Not really.
You didn't even know he had powers.
You've been gone for a long time.
Ability for making him angry is like, come on. And then Storm even comes in and she's like, there are very few expectations of the dead. And he's like, what? After you died, Peter was free to canonize you as he wished. He did not have the truth staring him in the face. So her argument is that he has made some sort of amazing person out of that Mikhail can never live up to.
Yeah, and I can believe that, right? I mean,
legacy, and that's more realistic, yeah. I guess. Him as being like, that's because I've never let him down before.
Well, if he was all, I mean, obviously, if he was always Colossus's older brother, which physically he would have always been, he probably was the guy that was like,
you can't say that. You can't say it. Never let him down before if you've been gone for however many years.
Well, but when they were younger, right?
You have a huge ego and you're a bit of a narcissist.
Maybe he stood up to bullies, and like when there was no food on the table, Mika would take off and he'd hunt down a wolf and they'd cut it up and eat it, and then they would be able to live for another day. And then he disappeared, and Peter was like 14 at the time. So for the first 14 years of his life, he's like, my brother can do no bad. Ah, and now I'm back and I see my brother. What? He's a weakling and a wimp? I am so angry.
Yeah, which is great. I like it. I just don't like the whole bit of him saying,
because I've never let him down before.
Storm comes in a very sexy Savage Land-esque outfit.
Yeah, I mean, there was some blasting that happened, I think, last issue that has taken a toll on her costume, but yes.
Well, the feel like the shoes are made of whatever garb they have in this land.
Yes.
And the sleeves, I guess, are probably her sleeves.
Yep.
It reminds me of Rogue's Savage Land costume. That's why I said Savage Land.
Storm goes on to lecture Mikhail and talk about the dream of life and blah, 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 blah. And Mikhail's like, that man no longer exists. And then he takes off.
Yep. And Storm says, let him go. He can't outrun there's no way to, there could be no way to distance himself from the truth he's learned this day, which is, I don't know. That's another bad line. We really taught him something. Let him go.
I don't know. Did the ladies teach him anything, or did he learn that he has the capability to let his brother down?
I feel like it's just too much. Like, Storm would not say the truth that he has learned today. She would just say, let him go.
Right.
He can't run away from what he truly fears.
Well, he can't run away from the truth, right? Dot. Period. Next page. Yeah. Yeah, but, you know, this is, you know, the artist and the ink, well, the artist gets to do all of the showiness. The writer has to come in and they have to embellish, right? They have to be able to throw their own flair on it. And I think a lot of people confuse that by adding a lot more words.
You have to do it in the voices of the characters that are already established.
Right. But does Scott Lobdell know these characters?
He's doing a decent job.
Yeah.
He's just not doing 100%. He's more like an 88%.
We'll see if he gets there, but he's working on it.
So hopefully he'll be there. Yeah. And it's a good start, I suppose. But yeah, it is way too many words. He's definitely overcompensating for something, which is his lack of experience, I suppose.
Well, I mean, Chris Claremont was a pretty experienced writer, and he had a way of going overboard on words.
He definitely did, but at least his words kind of added to the story, usually.
Yeah.
Here, there's a lot of words that often don't. We cut over to where Archangel is, and he's in a Danger Room-esque session where, unbeknownst to him, his opponents are expendable. And he's working for the Avatar's rebels now. He's got his mind wiped by the new Avatar, who is the former Avatar's daughter. And his mind is a bit cloudy, and his wings end up killing everybody. And he's like, I thought this was a practice session. And then the Avatar shows up, and she's like, oh, I better touch him again, because I'm losing my mind control.
And so she does go up, touches him. And Archangel, immediately goes back into his Protector General, which is, I guess, the title he has right now. And they have a little smooch, and he's all back on board.
Yeah, he's like, we got to go kill them now. And she's like, well, we got until tomorrow morning. So, you know, let's spend the night together.
Oh, that's right. And they do.
Yeah.
It doesn't count if he's mind controlled.
That's true. I mean, technically it's rape.
Yeah, exactly. So Colossus, who is in this panel here? It's Storm, Colossus. Who's in the background on like a Ronto?
I don't know, but that is an issue that happens a lot in this, in that somebody's in the background and you're like, what's going on here?
Yeah, because it could be Mikhail on a lizard, but I don't think it is.
I think it's just some guy.
Yeah. So Colossus is doubting everything, his past, his brothers, his memories. He doesn't know what to believe in anymore. Again, we're just stretching this thing out here.
And, you know, it's a nice tender moment. And then the next we get four word balloons of dialogue. And I have no idea who is doing this. I think it's the Avatar. So we're already cutting over to the Avatar's attack.
Yeah.
It's starting to get confusing because then we cut to the next page and we've got the posse comitatus, who I think we've met before, but I forget which side they're on. But they get ambushed by, I think, our team, or maybe not. I'm not really sure, because the X-Men then just show up and they're like, which is why they brought friends, and I don't know who they're talking about.
Yeah. I like the guy that's got like the Predator arm knife thing. He's cool. I just like that Predator arm knife thing.
Colossus is ridiculously carrying a tree.
a tree that somebody has sawed on both sides and happens to have no branches.
Yeah, so essentially a tree-sized log.
Yep.
I don't know. I've never seen Colossus. Like, I've seen Colossus do stuff with stuff, but I've never seen him just carrying one into battle. It's kind of ridiculous.
It is silly. But then he turns it around and he pushes it up against all these bad guys.
Even if you're like super strong, it's kind of a lot of effort. It's like he's holding it from the front.
That would take a lot of strength.
So he has to like move it, shuffle it down to the middle. It's like, hold on. And then he runs it at those guys and they're like, well, I just saw you doing all that stuff. I'm not just going to stand here.
And they do. They stand in a perfect line for this log to knock them all over.
The sound bone breaking of flesh tearing would horrify Colossus if you could hear it over the sound of his blood pounding through his veins. I don't know. Blood doesn't pound that loud.
This would take a lot of effort because, as you mentioned, he's holding it at the base of the log, but there's easily a good, I don't know, 20 feet behind him. So, I mean, if you start thinking about levers and fulcrums, I mean, there's an immense amount of weight on the other side of that log, and he's just carrying it like it don't mean nothing.
He's a very strong guy.
He is.
He's been stronger than strong guy.
He might be. I don't know if they've fought yet, but I'd give it to Colossus.
Angel attacks Jean. And she's like, Warren! And he thinks to himself, the witch struck out instinctively with her mind? Fight it, Warren. I'm skipping over all the other stuff.
No, I mean, you are right. Like, the first chunk of this issue is a lot of character development and the emotional journey that Colossus and Mikhail are going through. And that's fine. That's good. It's all good stuff. And then we jump into this battle, which is just happening at breakneck speed. So much so that, as you mentioned, like, we don't know who is who if they're not an X-Man.
Sunfire blasts Archangel, and Iceman's kind of upset about that. He's almost sautéed, but he's all right, and he wakes up. So the whole Archangel thing happened is over.
Yep.
Bobby, is that you?
Well, the good news is Sunfire got to do something in this issue.
That's true. Yeah. Although it seemed like in the previous panel, like Jean was coaxing Archangel out of the trance anyway. So really, Sunfire's thing probably didn't need to happen.
No. Avatar says, firearms master, target all aliens. Colossus is not happy about this. He has a very wide and angry looking expression. And I guess he jumps in front of a beam. The target all aliens actually just meant, I don't know, Iceman. So Colossus jumps in front of it.
Well, there's two beams that are fired, but we only see what happens to the beam. Presumably the other beam
missed. Yeah.
He appeared as if out of nowhere, crossing the distance between himself and his comrades in an effort to absorb the blast from the neutronic cannon. He's reminded for his efforts by
his rewarded.
He's rewarded for his efforts by pain, unlike any he's ever known.
Yeah, I mean, Scott Lobdell's he's dealing with what he's been provided here.
Which, you know, he's doing a great effort of that. These words are necessary. These are good words.
These are words that help us understand what is happening on the page. If it wasn't some guy yelling Piotr, I would think that Toad jumped out of nowhere.
But yeah, this is Mikhail who attacks the Avatar, somehow getting straight across the battlefield right up to the Avatar. If you killed my brother, and she says, then I can go to my grave in peace. And then he blasts her, or she blasts him with her mind bullet powers, because she says, fool, did you think Earth was the only birthplace of mutants? With your death, and then we get a panel that says, no, the void is growing. And it took me a while to figure out what was going on here, because in the next, and like a few panels later, Mikhail is at Colossus's side.
Right.
So I figure if you zoom into that.
Who went flying?
I think that's Mikhail.
Okay.
That's what I'm getting at.
Okay.
Mikhail goes flying, I think, to the other side of the battlefield. There's no way to really tell, though.
Right. Why do you think it was written in here, fool, did you think Earth was the only birthplace of mutants? Why can't these just be aliens with powers?
I don't know.
Okay. I mean, it's not, means nothing to the plot. It's not like a big revelation or, oh my gosh, what are we going to do? It's just,
Scott Lobdell is thinking, what would Chris Claremont do? And Chris Claremont would pepper these aliens with some sort of weird backstory in case we ever came back to them. So I'm going to make them have mutants, just in case.
Okay, that's so fair.
I don't know if that's the truth or if it's an unnecessary flourish. At any rate, what I thought happened was that Mikhail was dead. Because she says, with your death, the portal shall, what? And I thought she killed him.
Ah.
But then he's in, like, another panel.
No, the void is growing, and he goes flying. Presumably, somebody goes flying, and it could be Mikhail. But why did he go flying? How'd that happen?
Because the void is growing.
Okay. But, I mean, he is like, 100 feet in the air, arcing over the void or the portal or whatever.
Oh, well, and next we see him, he is at Colossus's side. Colossus is unconscious, I guess.
Well, hang on. Who's the guy that says, flee while we have a chance? Who's that guy?
I don't know.
Okay. Why is he there?
Because somebody's got to shout, flee while we have the chance.
If this indeed be the end of our world, says a guy, or is that the lady?
No, I think that's a guy.
And then Avatar finishes it.
It will end with a dance. No, this is Primate.
Oh, Primate. Okay. Oh, this is the good guys then.
Got silvery hair.
Okay.
Primate's got the purple hair.
Got it.
We will end with a dance on the corpses of our enemies. Fools, what matters the spoil of war to a dead man?
So this is like the subplot of the people that belong to this planet. Primate, her people, and then these other guys and their people.
This is stuff we don't care about.
Stuff that we don't care about. Stuff that hasn't been fleshed out. Stuff where the stakes of whatever this battle is are completely not important to us. Well, anyways, Mikhail says he'll survive the blast. No, Gene says he'll survive the blast. He'll survive the blast, Mikhail, only to be destroyed by the void. Unless the portal is closed. So now he's gonna do it. I gotta close it.
He has got to close it, so he goes and he closes it.
I mean, they use teamwork, right? Like, Gene's got a razor TK bubble, and, I don't know, Storm has to do something.
Yeah, what is a TK bubble? Sunfire, your atomic power will open a window to Earth through which you can travel. Okay, sure. Iceman, you will need to cool down the surrounding area, keep the heat energy from ballooning outwards towards everyone. Storm shows up and says, on your word, Mr. R,
yeah.
Which is, would she turn into Harley Quinn all of a sudden?
Yeah, she doesn't say Mr. R.
He doesn't tell her what to do, even though she has, like, earlier in the issue, she's like, maybe I can use my lightning to do the same stuff that Mikhail does, but she does nothing here.
So, I like, how do I put this? I like that there's a plan, and Mikhail has finally become the leader, and he's shouting out orders, and he's coming up with a way that he can do this without killing everybody. But in order to make this work, you have to sort of sprinkle all the issues or the problems that led to the death in the first place. And finally, Mikhail thinks about it and becomes the leader he was always meant to be, and he uses everybody's powers to safely do this. But here it's just like, okay, fine. Everybody do all these things for some reason, and now I'm going to use my powers. Okay, well, we're back.
Now, Gene, raise your TK bubble. Raised, Storm. What does a TK bubble do?
It's a telekinetic, it's like a shield.
So it's like a Miss Invisible protector sort of thing. It keeps the explosion inside.
So instead of a force field, it's a bubble. It's either keeping the explosion inside or it's keeping them safe inside. One of the two.
Well, it works, and a giant section of the rock that they're standing on goes up through the void, and I guess the void closes, and the good guys are safe.
Misha, he's not breathing. Oh, did I bring you back only to lose you again? You haven't even met our sister.
And Mikhail coughs and says, we have a sister? How old is she?
Well, it depends on who you ask. I do not understand. It gets complicated.
And that's kind of a cute, funny moment.
It could be better, though, because... that depends on who you ask. What? Like, who are you asking that would know these things?
Well, now you're nitpicking.
It's stupid. I am nitpicking.
It is.
But it should go like this. Her name is Liliana. How old is she? It gets complicated. I do not understand. Done.
Or it depends when you ask. I do not understand. It gets complicated. Right. When? Because if you ask now, she's 7, but if you ask like 6 months ago, she was 15.
That's better, but it's even better if you just get rid of that line.
Right, and just say it's complicated. I do not understand. We'll talk later. Yeah, sure. I get it. That depends on who you ask. Doesn't entirely make sense, but he's trying.
Yeah, you know, it's a nice moment that is not entirely ruined by some clunky dialogue. The X-Men show up. Jean Grey says, Mikhail, the last psychic readings from your people indicated the destruction of energy had dissipated. They're alive, she says, lying to him. I'm assuming she's lying.
Tell me, Kevin, do you and your friends do this every day?
So here's a better way to do that Jean line.
Jean Grey doesn't have the heart to tell him that they actually are all dead.
They actually all died. Yeah, I was going to say... that could have been an opportunity, right? Mikhail, like, the people, how are they? And Jean could say, I lost telepathic connection with them as the portal closed. The last I saw, they were fine. But would we truly ever know? And then you either do nothing with that, and it's just a little cliffhanger that who cares. Or, you know, 100 issues from now, they come back and they're like, you left us, Mikhail, you jerk!
Yeah.
But they're fine, right? This is, to me, this just feels like...
wrap it up quickly, people. Come on.
Wrap it up. We're talking about Bishop next issue, so we're done. Everybody's fine. Nobody died. Moving on.
Really, the Blackbird is right outside and lands on the new cliffside.
Well...
pick them up.
Professor and Forge were circling and...
yeah, I guess.
I guess it's interesting we didn't get a... oh, I guess Xavier, I see it, Forge. I'm mentally scanning now. The X-Men, they're alive! So, it's all...
The X-Men, it must be, but are they alive? I mean, it could just be something else. Why do you assume it's the X-Men?
Good point. Could be the bad guys.
Could be anything.
So in this that I'm reading, it actually has the letters panel. Sorry, the letters page from this issue.
Oh, yeah.
And no. Were Marvel letters really all that good?
Some of them were fun.
Some of them were fun. I mean,
you know... My big experience with the letters pages of Marvel Comics was mainly Gru,
right,
which were always fun.
Sure.
And G.I. Joe, which were always, can I get a no prize for this?
Right. The main through line, now it's one page, and it's just like 3/4 of a page because there's like a whole U.S. Postal Service management disclaimer or something on it. But the through line of these letters is, do you think Storm and Bishop are going to get together, and if so, what about Forge? And my question to that is, like, why does anybody think that Storm and Bishop are going to get together? Because this is in reference to issue 283, which I believe was the introduction of Bishop.
Did they have any sort of connection?
I mean, there's that one moment where she like holds a shotgun to his face and is like, I'm not going to let you. I don't like your ways. And so, you know, I'm a cynical guy. And I'm like, is it because they're black? Is this the only reason that this letters section is filled with, are Bishop and Storm going to get together?
How many letters are we talking about?
Three out of the five or six letters that are here.
Really?
Okay. So is that just one? It's
well, I mean, you know, let's picture our typical 1990s childlike audience who their only experience are movies and TV shows in which, for the most part, black people get together with black people right. And white people get together with white people. And it's very, I don't know, not very, it's not like it is today.
No.
But yeah, I mean, I can imagine that, oh, this person must have been introduced as a love interest for Storm, even though Storm has had relationships with Forge and Dracula and all sorts of things.
Right.
Yeah, it's weird that they would publish those letters, I guess. That's my concern is like, why would you publish these letters if you have, I guess maybe they didn't have a lot of better letters to publish?
I don't know. Either that or they're teasing the fact that I don't know if they ever actually even become an item, to be honest. But it is interesting and fun that at least people are like, hey, what about Storm and Forge? And the editor, whoever's, I guess, Bob Harris, he's not answering. Or Suzanne Gaffney, who's ever actually answering these questions, doesn't. Just like in every Marvel letter section, nobody ever says really anything of substance from an answer perspective. But I don't know. It just, I read these and I was like, huh, that's weird that there's multiple letters asking about Storm and Bishop. That's, I guess, from my 2024 brain, like, I don't think that would be where people immediately go when two black characters are introduced.
Yeah. And I think for us, even in the 1990s, I don't think we would go there.
Maybe. I don't know. It was a different time, right?
But yeah, I do remember that there is a cover of Storm and Forge.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
It's X-Men, Uncanny X-Men 289.
Yep.
And they're embracing in a kiss. So that'll either be the reignition of their relationship or more likely the end.
Yeah. So that was X-Men 286. It's fine.
It wasn't fine. It was bad.
Oh, sorry. I don't know. It was fine for me. It wasn't. We've read worse issues. The fight was ridiculous, but whatever. I don't know.
Next issue, Bishop's back, so hopefully we'll get back to the things that are interesting about this run of Uncanny. I mean, it started out all right with Gideon, or was it Gideon? Or
right, yes, Gideon. And the upstarts, all those folks. And
Gideon's X-Force, right? The other guy with the green hair.
Matsushita, but he's the upstart. It was the green-haired guy. No, Gideon's got the ponytail.
Fitzroy, that's who it
Fitzroy.
Is.
Fitzroy, yeah. Yeah.
That was fun.
That was fun, but I think we've moved on from that, or maybe we'll come back to it next issue. I don't, like I said, man, I don't remember any of these things.
And that's a problem, shouldn't it? I mean, maybe you didn't read them. I remember reading them, and I remember Mikhail, and I remember, like, I don't know. I don't think I was long for many more issues of Uncanny.
Definitely not. Things that involved other planets that I didn't care about and the Savage Land are things that I usually just skimmed and bagged, boarded, and never looked at again.
Yeah.
This would qualify as that.
I think that the only thing that kept me collecting Uncanny at this point was the fact that it was part of Executioner's Song. And I think that is when after Executioner's Song ended, I stopped collecting Uncanny.
One of the Q-Berts does either Uncanny or X-Men, so I stayed with it for a little bit after the Image thing, but
I think one might do one and one might do the other.
Yeah, it was good enough for a little while, and then I'm sure I've said this, I feel like a broken record, but definitely by 300 I'm out.
I think I picked up 300 because it was 300, but yeah, same.
Anyhow, looks like somebody grabbed some information from the old iTunes page.
Yeah, I've been working hard, hardly working.
Yeah, and is there really a review from 2013?
Yeah, and I don't know, we may have already covered it, but it's from Japan, so, you know, I don't know if I certainly don't always like it's very they don't make it easy for you to look up iTunes reviews from other countries. And the only way to do it is to know what the country codes are.
Right.
And to punch them into a URL. And so you do you go through all the countries and then you get like very minimal feedback. And we have a Japan one that is from 2013. And maybe we covered it, but I couldn't remember because I don't think we've ever done one from Japan. But
I know that you do this and you've mentioned that it's difficult to try to pull this information and probably near impossible to get a complete listing. But Yo Komei from the past, greetings from the future in the present, if you're still listening, after constant pleading from Adam and Jeremy. Yeah, sure. I've finally broken down and decided to write a review. Just kidding. Love the show. It's great to hear these two X-Men fans cover old issues. Keep it up, fellas. Well, we have even beyond 10 years. I keep forgetting it's 2024.
Yeah, me too.
So
feels like 2023. It's always going to be 2023.
I still write 1999 on my checks. Just kidding. I haven't written a check in probably 7 years.
Since 1999.
Bert JG from May 22nd, 2021. X-Men greatness. Consistently entertaining, has listened on, talking about himself in like the third person, has listened on and off for years. During lockdown, decided to start from the beginning while reading the comics in order. That could be fun, I guess.
Sure.
The lockdown's gone now, so I wonder if he's like, all right, I'm done with this. Moving on. Other things.
MJJ, 2200, a listener from Canada, says, Marvel X-Men Last, such a great show. I'm so far behind, but can't wait to get through all 200 episodes I still have left. I listen to some other comics podcasts, and over time, they start to get too hard on the comics. The Danger Room hasn't gotten to that point yet. Sorry for this issue. And I doubt Adam and Jeremy will get to that point. Whoops. I just want to have fun and go on this journey, and they are the best company for that. Thank you. No, thank you.
Yeah. Well, I think hard on the issues. I don't know that we're hard on the issues.
No.
I think I don't even know that we're like super critical on issues.
The really, really bad issues, like most of X-Force, we're not too hard on them.
Yeah. I mean, I think that you could definitely do some in-depth analysis and compare it and contrast it to previous artists and writers and really come down on the editorial staff. And I don't know, I think we poke fun. And you read that excerpt from the book. So I don't know. I feel like we do. Feel like we try to keep it light and fun, right? We don't want to go too deep into it.
Yeah, we don't want to be negative Nancys. We'd rather be positive Pete's.
Wow. Marcin A from this, well, actually from last year, 3/22/2023. Who could ask for more? Well, I could. When I dove into reading all the X titles in order as complete as I could, I was very happy to find this long-running cast to listen to during the hours I couldn't read the comics. The pinpointed in the timeline discussions make it easy when I don't want too many spoilers for the overall stories. I think we've done a pretty good job on that. These fellows are funny, charming, and more conscientious and kind than they would ever give themselves credit for. Their voice work is hysterical. I find that sentence hysterical. Keep it coming. Hi from the past, present, future. A little bit of both, I think. Or a little bit of all three, I think.
Yeah, since you're from the past.
We're in the present, but you won't hear this until the future. Our future, which is your present, but our past.
Chrissy Bear? Christ Bear?
Sure.
From this year in January. Says, great podcast. I'm assuming that's great podcast. This podcast is great. The guys do a good job of going through the comics and seem like true fans of the material. The only downside is it got me really back into comics again, and this podcast made me want to have a full run. Oh, sorry.
Oh, boy.
About that. Or as full as I could get run of Uncanny X-Men, and I'm only 68 comics away if we don't count the reprints. You know what? I feel like nowadays it's probably really easy to get a complete run of Uncanny X-Men.
I don't know. I mean,
there's eBay. There's so many different outlets of, especially if you're not looking for like mint condition.
I'm assuming that X-Men number one is one of those 68. But there's, I think in the early runs, I'm shooting from the hip, right? X-Men number one is certainly worth a lot of money. the first 10 is probably a declining scale of value. And then I think beyond 10, right, you're probably looking at $30, $40, depending on the conditions of those issues. That's somewhat attainable. As I mentioned many years ago, I had a singular goal, and that was to own at least one original print pre-reprint issue. And the one that I got was the final issue before the reprints, which is, I should do a CGC. I'm sure it would get like a 1.5 or a 2. I mean, it's not torn or anything, but it's definitely been a used and abused comic. I'm happy that I have that.
Well, at that point, a CGC is just for preserving it.
Yeah, slabbing it and then getting the silly little number on there and being like, yeah, this thing's worth $19.
Well, yeah.
I paid $50 to have it slabbed, but it's worth $19. I'm not going to do that. I'm not going to do the CGC thing. But to your point, I think, yeah.
Probably fine if you just put it in like a Mylar bag or something.
There's probably some key issues, right? Like Days of Future Past are probably a little bit difficult to get. X-Men number one, as I mentioned, and probably a handful within those first 60 or so issues. But everything else, I mean, if you don't care about dealing with duplicates, I'm sure you could go on eBay, find Uncanny X-Men lot, get 30, 40 issues in a pile, rinse and repeat, and you can probably build a collection pretty fast that way. Then you just have to deal with all the duplicates, and then what do you do with those? Do you resell them? Do you take them to a comic book shop? That's basically how I built the bulk of my NES cartridge collection was just, there's 150 cartridges for $200. Buy it now.
Right.
Oh, yeah. There's 60 for $85. Buy it now. Okay, now I have Duck Hunt 5 times. What do?
The dupes.
So, well, I hope by now, well, I guess it was just January. Hopefully that list has gone from 68 down to, I don't know, 65. The question, though, is once you get that full run, what do you do?
You just collect something else, or you figure out if you want to get them slabbed, or, I don't know, you sell it.
Yeah.
And recollect it. You sell it, and then you start over.
You sell all of them, and then you start the journey again?
Yeah.
Just collecting the same things?
Just collecting the same things.
Because really, what I've found about collecting is it's all about the journey, right? It's once you hit that goal, which I don't know from a collecting standpoint, does anyone truly hit a goal? I suppose if your goal is to have like every baseball card from 2022 Topps edition, that's probably an attainable goal. So then you're like, well, now I want them every year from 2000 to this year. And then when you do that, then maybe it's 1990 to 2000.
Everybody has their so-called grail items that they had. And I've in my experience, the minute I get a grail item, I want to get another one.
Oh, I guess I have a couple of what one would consider grail items in the video game space. And I think maybe even in the comic space, like two, like nothing crazy, but a couple, like the first appearance of Gambit I happen to have. I think it's in really good condition. That I think is a grail item, or at least it's worth a lot. And there's some others. I don't know. Let's look it up.
The comic that I have that is worth the most is $600. So I was imagining that the first appearance of Gambit would be worth more than that.
So my first result, which is an Amazon page, confusingly, has a price tag of $269.95. I don't know that I would trust that as the authority on comics, but I don't believe it's worth $600.
Well, it's only worth what someone is willing to pay for it. So,
truth.
I'd say I have a comic worth $600, but I mean, the likelihood of me getting that for it is probably pretty small. I should get that CGC, though.
Technically, the first appearance of Gambit turns out to be X-Men Annual 14.
Depending on what the actual publishing date is.
According to this article, the annual didn't have a publishing date, and it was in continuity set after the events of 266.
Well, we know it's in continuity after the events of 266 because everybody knows who he is. Like he's not introduced as a new character.
What is? Oh, geez. Is he
hanging out with Storm at that point?
Yes.
It would be weird to have him just kind of hanging out with Storm, and then in the next issue he meets Storm.
So I'm just going to look it up. Not that I'm going to sell. I don't actually think that $269 is correct. I'm going to guess it's probably worth more like $60. Sold search X-Men 266. Okay.
But it's CGC'd at a 9.8. It's probably worth a lot more. I don't think I have own any comics that are worth or have a 9.8 valued.
So ended recently. Its top value sold this morning at $147.
It's not bad.
And it is not CGC. It is just the book. It's not even bagged and boarded in this picture. It's just a raw issue laying on a table. Now, it is pretty minty, though. Spine is in really good condition. There's like one little ding in the bottom corner, but other than that, it's a pretty crispy issue there.
The one that's sold or yours?
One that actually sold.
Oh, okay.
I don't know how mine compares. It's bagged and boarded and in a box downstairs. There is a CGC one here that looks like it's sold for $315, but this one's also signed. Oh no, and this is a listing. It's not an actual sold price.
Mm.
So I don't know. It's
probably been sitting there for months.
So I don't know does value denote Grail or just like relative popularity?
No. Grail is just something that you want.
But it's usually an item that's
hard to find.
Hard to find, but in general, many folks would like to get their hands on that thing, whatever that is. Granted, there's personal Grails. I'll give you that.
I have a lot of Gru item Grails that I don't feel like there's a lot of people out there looking for. There's just enough that it makes it hard to get, but...
Here's a... CGC 9.6 that apparently sold for $2,550. It says Newsstand Mark Jewelers. I don't know what that means. I know what Newsstand means, right? It's got the barcode instead of Spider-Man. But I don't know what Mark Jewelers means. Now it makes me wonder if I have the Newsstand Mark and if the Newsstand Mark is more valuable than the Spider-Man Mark. I'm going to guess I don't have the Newsstand Marks.
Mark Jewelers Insert Variant.
Oh.
So apparently there's a insert from Mark Jewelers inside it.
Like an advertisement?
Yeah.
Oh.
According to the internet. It is Newsstand edition, so it has the UPC, and then inside will be the Mark Jewelers insert.
Huh. Okay. I'm sure I don't have that. Maybe, but I'm sure I don't.
Newsstand UPC versions are worth more than the Spider-Man UPC versions, which...
I believe it.
Wolverine number 6 with the cover with Hulk and Wolverine. The Newsstand version is worth more than the UPC version. Don't know why.
Approximately 5% of print run included these advertisements distributed near military bases. 4-page interior printed on paper stock and bound into the centerfold. First cover and second appearance of Gambit. Interesting. And it's just the advertisement. Okay, well, that's how interesting. If it's the same Mark Jewelers there in La Crosse, Wisconsin, which is just 2 hours from me, I should see if they have the issue. Take it from them.
Or you could try to get one and sell it to them.
Here is, this is the last one, but there's a 0.5 X-Men number 1.
$250.
Well, they're attempting to sell it for $4,000. It's not sold. It's just being attempted to be sold at $4,000.
I had, he doesn't work there anymore, but I had a coworker who had a copy of X-Men number 1 that was slabbed at like a 2.5. I thought he said he got it for $250, which I guess maybe that's a steal.
Probably. I mean, I don't know. If I saw an X-Men number 1 for $250, it might make me think. Hard to say, Adam. My uncle owns a copy of X-Men number 1 and he won't let me look at it. I don't spend much time with him, but I've only met him a few times in my life. He's, you know, he's one of those...
Every time you're like, hey, can I look at your copy of X-Men number 1?
He knew I was super into comics. I've told the story before, but he had like this little notepad, and on the notepad, he was a big comic book collector when he was a kid in the 60s. And so he's got tons of key issues because he just buy them on the newsstand. I think this is in a time before bagging and boarding, of course, but I think he read them. He took decent care of them, stuck them in a box, and he's just held on to them forever. And so I went and visited him, and I was like, yeah, I love comic books. He's like, well, take a look at this. And it was just this little notebook. He's like, oh, my God, you got X-Men number 1 and 5 and blah, blah, blah. He's like, yeah. And I was like, oh. I'm like 10 at the time or 12 or whatever. I'm like, sure would be nice. Hinting, right? Not just outright like, can I see it? But like, boy, I've never seen one like that before. And eventually he's like, yeah, they're too buried in the attic. I can't get them. I was like, oh. So I was in the same house as a pile of 1960s X-Men comics, but as well as probably Supermans and Spider-Mans and Batmans, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera.
Who knows?
But, maybe he's lying to me.
Maybe he just... Oh, he likes comics, huh? Let's figure out what some valuable comics are. I'll put them on this notepad.
Yeah, and I'll whip it out, and he's going to be so impressed.
Always trying to impress 10-year-olds.
Well, anyways, if you've got insider information on, I don't know, comic books and selling and grails and any other thing that's... Well, yeah, anything that's already mine. Exactly. Contact us at www.xmenpodcast.com. Go out to facebook.com/dangerroompodcast. Twitter us, or X, I guess, as it is now. Dangerroom Go. Dangerroom@xmenpodcast.com is probably the easiest way to get a hold of us, as that is our email address, iTunes, or wherever you subscribe to podcasts. And you can go out to patreon.com/dangerroom to hear other stuff that is not generally available.
So I also noted a couple of countries where we got some 5-star ratings just because it was neat.
Mm-hmm.
These aren't reviews, but we got 2 5-star ratings in Brazil.
Well,
that's neat. 3 5-star ratings in Australia. That's neat. A 1 5-star rating each in Finland and Ireland.
Nice.
Another 5-star rating in New Zealand.
We're worldwide, baby.
Yeah, it's cool. I like it. I made it as a note, so obviously I think it's pretty cool.
I think it's cool, too.
Yay! We're in agreement.
In agreeance. Adam, do you have anything else?
Nope.
I don't either. So, until next time, my name is Jeremy.
My name's Adam.
And the Danger Room is closed.